All right. It's a Monday. Let's get some winners and losers on the weekend. 713-572-4610 if you have some winners and or losers on the weekend. Not a lot of sports actually happening, weirdly enough, this weekend, even though it feels like we're getting back into that space where sports is about to hit very hard in the fall. But regardless, I think there were still some winners and losers on the weekend, and I'll start with training camp winners and losers. And one of the big winners in my book, I think that Dalton Schultz was a winner on the weekend. I think, for one, we've seen him kind of make a number of catches that are encouraging towards, you know, the role that he should have and that we've expected of him on this team as the pass catching tight end. I think D'Amico also gave him a little credit for, you know, the catch radius that he has, that he demonstrated at one point kind of with one of those bobbling catches that was thrown a little bit out just on the edge where he kind of tips it back to himself and makes the grab. But then also he was available for the media on Saturday. And I thought he took a decent amount of accountability in that. Speaking of, this was one of the things that he said, and this is Schultz one here, Fig, where he was asked straight up, were you hurt last year? And this is what he had to say.
That's hard. Everybody's hurt, dude. Like, no matter. Right. Like, I went through just some, like, rehabs and some deficiencies that I had. But, like, I don't know. Everybody's hurt, dude. Like, nobody's fresh. Especially in the playoffs, like, you ain't playing somebody at 100%. That's like the beauty of the game, is to try to find a way to give everything you have into whatever percentage that you want to call your health at that point. You know what I mean? Everybody's fighting through that. And so that's just a battle. It's the war of attrition that we play. And I was happy to get an offseason under my belt where I could just kind of refocus on getting my body back to a really nice baseline.
Yeah, I'm glad he didn't use it.
You're like, I'm not feeling that. I don't care.
Well, I'm glad he didn't use it as an excuse. I think he gave a good answer. And you hope that maybe that was the reason for last year. But, you know, the rule is always like, if you're good enough to play, then you can't use the injury as an excuse. So I think he still needed to be better out there.
Oh, for sure.
Hopefully that was the difference and he will be better this year. But no, I'm not really buying that. And for me, I was trying to think about it driving in. I don't know if it was the Jets game on Halloween. There was one game in particular where just like the body language just seemed so poor. And that was a big thing throughout the year of, yeah, I know physically like the numbers are not there or the performance, but it also just seemed at times he was like mentally checked out or he was so discouraged with the season. So, yeah, maybe the injury played a role, some sort of injury, or just his body being beat up. And if he's healthier this year, he can have a better year. But I also think there was still more at play last year with him.
Without question, there was more at play. In fact, the question that the answer that he had given before that kind of, were you hurt? Because that was actually a follow-up kind of talking about, you know, he basically kind of said things that to the effect of he wasn't in a place that, you know, he liked or what have you. And it felt to me like there might be some, and maybe this is just reading too much into it, there might have been some like mental health portions in this or what have you. I don't know. But he also talked about, because I have notes from being out there, the energy around the building being different, changes from last year, given the facility, new energy. So I think you're right. Like, there's definitely something in his demeanor and the way he operated last year that left something to be desired. But he also seems to be pretty excited. This is what he said about kind of the Nick Cayley's tight end background kind of helping and everything that's going on. Let's see if you can peep the excitement that I seem to hear.
It's good, dude. It's good. Especially like in these installs, he's able to like, I don't know, tight end, you got a lot on your plate, like run game, pass game, protections, like running back, like everything. You have to know everything. And so having a guy that's installing that, knowing that there's like few quirks on certain things, that's like, hey, on this, you can treat it like X, Y, and Z. And, you know, he's able to kind of like give you that on the front end before you go out for yourself and run it and have to learn it for yourself. So he's able to kind of get you almost ahead of the curve in some of these installs.
All the messaging has always been very positive around Nick Cayley from these, you know, from the players in the organization, which is great. But obviously, it's then a different thing to actually implement it in the game. But this is the one position group where I still have questions about the wide receiver room. I still have questions about the running back, certainly with, you know, Joe Mixon's injury. And I have questions about the tight end position that I don't know how much it was improved in the offseason. But the hope with this position is specifically tied to Nick Cayley because of his background, that almost like the addition by subtraction on the offensive line. In this case, you can almost have the same parts. Obviously, you know, Brevin Jordan, knock on wood, should be back and healthy this year. But
I think Dalton gave big praise to like his speed as well. Yeah. So I think that's definitely an addition there.
And but just simply by adding Nick Cayley, you hope that brings the most out of that room. So it's better than hearing your players put down your new coach.
Yeah.
But we've played a lot of audio this offseason of everyone talking up Cayley, which is great. And it sounds great, but still, I have to actually see it come out on the field because he's doing something he's never done before and calling plays. So we'll find out when the season starts, but that's certainly good to hear from Schultz in the meantime.
And I mean, just real quick on training camp, because I was looking at my notes, there's a number of guys I can maybe shout out as winners on the weekend, but specifically a number that pops up, because I try and write numbers instead of writing names. It's a little bit quicker in my shorthand. Number 30, Jalen Smith, third round pick. They call him J-Rock. He just shows up everywhere, including there was one play where, you know, Sean was talking about us being on the field, sideline situation. There was one play where the play actually happens close to us. You know, they have officials out there. Mm-hmm. It looked like J-Rock got called for a penalty. He seemed to be kind of trying to explain himself to the ref. C.J. Gardner-Johnson comes and gets him, pulls him away. The next play goes over to him. He does a great job running the receiver out of the ability to go and catch the ball. C.J. Gardner-Johnson comes over and like, hey, don't worry about it. We'll get that bleep back next time, as if to say, yo, that was how you get that back. He's integrated really well with that first team. He's made a lot of plays, interceptions. I'm ready for J-Rock to be that depth cornerback that I think we're all looking forward to. So I don't know that I can say definitively right now that it is a big check mark for Nick Caserio on that draft pick. But we are moving very quickly towards that.
Well, yeah, you're not alone. I've heard a lot of praise about him. So I am looking forward to seeing him in real game action against other teams, because that could be a big spot. You know, if he could fill that, that's important for this defense. By the way, you sound like a real football coach with just the number. I always hate when you interview a coach and they're talking about the other team and they don't know any of their names because they watch film and they just know numbers and like, number 55 is pretty good. And the linebacking corner is like, what? Who are you talking about?
How much do you think that's just looking at the tape, or how much do you think is like a petty thing where I don't want to say that guy's name?
It's true. It's probably both. Yeah. I think so.
But it might also just be that they don't know that dude's name. It's just the number.
Yeah, that's true. Especially at the NFL level, like, you should know a lot of these guys. And, you know, they still just use their numbers when it's like, you're talking about, you know, like one of the better receivers in the league. You know who this guy is.
Yeah, it could be a thing. That's how they communicate, especially if you're on the field. Hey, number 55, that's how they just communicate with people.
What's worse, just using the numbers or using like these arbitrary nicknames or like letters? Like our guy Nick Caserio talking about LD. What was the one that he would say? What was it for the Colts? Buck. Buckner just calling him Buck.
Yeah, that's worse. And I hate in baseball how they just add Y to the end of everybody with all the nicknames.
Yeah.
Like Breggy or
Hosey.
Yeah, they just shorten the name and add a Y. And that's everyone's nickname in baseball.
That's so
annoying when you hear Aaron Boone listing off all his players one after one with those stupid nicknames.
So just say his name.
Yeah.
You're already there. In fact, you might have made it more difficult. All right, some other winners and losers. I see you on the 713. Former North Shore and UH Coug, A.J. Carter, signed with the Kansas City Chiefs. Carter caught the Hail Mary that beat Duncanville in the 18th state championship game. Shout out to Ocho, because only Ocho would have that kind of detail on high school football. But again, salute to a man who's able to, you know, sign with the team, and hopefully he has an opportunity to latch. Some other winners and losers of the weekend. How about this? I don't know how much you care about this. I know there's been a lot of conversation. You mentioned it, the WNBA careening towards a potential lockout because of revenue sharing. Well, I think this is a win for the WNBA in a large place. We could kind of break this down if we want, but there's a Boston ownership group that now has been put into a place to have a deal to buy the Connecticut Sun from your beloved state of Connecticut for a WNBA record $325 million. And it seems like they would then move that team from what is the Mohegan Sun Arena to Boston, I imagine, possibly into the TD Garden as well. But, I mean, I know that you might have some sentimental situations that you want to talk about. I think that it is good to see WNBA valuations continue to go up, especially if you're from the players organization where you go, hey, as an ownership, yes, you might lose money, as a lot of teams and sports do. What you're doing, though, is you're continuing to increase the value on your asset, and when you sell, you will make all that money, so you cannot act like you're not gaining out of this situation.
Yeah, it's. It stinks for Connecticut. They already lost the Whalers in the 90s. Now they lose the Connecticut Sun. Any professional team that comes into that state just bails. But for the WNBA, it's a good sign. When I saw the team was being sold, I thought, oh, wow, that's surprising and interesting, because I did grow up going to Connecticut Sun games and I have a connection to them. But then I saw the figure and I was like, dang, $325 million. I think that bodes well, that someone is willing to invest that much money into the league or into this team. you know, to try to project the future of this league that obviously has this league has improved by a lot in the last just 2 years alone. So it's good to see these guys didn't make money by making bad investments. So to see somebody, you know, can see the direction of this league and where they're going to be and is willing to spend that much to get a WNBA team and move them to Boston, I think that bodes well for the league. Sucks for Connecticut, but that's Connecticut, and bodes well for the WNBA.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, that is fair. I don't know what you keep getting from Connecticut. Like, where do you turn your attention? Is it the MLR? Don't they have a team in Connecticut there? I don't know. I was trying to see if I can make you feel better, and I realized what I threw up here for you was, do they maybe have a Major League Rugby team? So I apologize. I think so.
Hey, y'all got UConn, right?
Yeah, you good. Yeah, you got Dan Hurley there good. Doing all that's that. Right. You good,
y'all
dog.
Good money.
Yeah.
Dan
yeah.
and Gino holding you down. That's you right. right.
And some guy at a Whole Foods here in Houston.
The callback king here. All right, how about this as a loser? The Dallas Mavericks, in a roundabout way, did you see this weekend a big extension get signed for Los Angeles Lakers guard Luka Doncic, a 3-year, $165 million contract. Big, but not the biggest. Not the full extent of what he could have gone. He could have gone four years with an additional, I think, $65 million on top of that. Compare that, though, to the player that they traded Luka Doncic for. Anthony Davis, this year, he has his 3-year, $175 million extension going to kick in. So not only did they trade Luka Doncic, the younger player, I think some would argue the better player, definitely the more healthy player in that situation. Now, of course, Luka's extension, I don't believe, kicks in this year. But when it does, it will be cheaper than the extension of Anthony Davis, who we'll see how many games he plays on that 3-year extension.
That's ridiculous. I mean, the trade will continue to look worse as time goes on because, obviously, the career projections. Luka, assuming he does stay healthy and fit, is going to play a lot longer from this point forward than Anthony Davis will, or even that team that you were trying to put together with him and Kyrie. Now, you're fortunate you got Cooper Flagg, but the actual trade itself in a vacuum is just going to continue to look worse and worse the further we move away from it. And if you're a Mavericks fan, I know there's a lot of excitement around this team still, even without Luka, for some fans at least, but that still has to make you sick that Anthony Davis is going to get that much, and he's going to get more than Luka. And yeah, you're going to get a lot less on the court, I would imagine.
So if you just want to upset a Mavericks fan, just remind him the dude that they traded Luka Doncic for is on a higher extension than the one that Luka just signed. Now, to be fair, some of that is because of the trade, and Luka did this specifically. I think it's a 2+1. So after 2 years, he'll have reached that 10 years point where he can get the bigger extension. So, obviously, this is all a monetary thing, but it also still just looks hilarious that the dude that has been injured, that you traded for Luka, and the idea of we're going to win now is also going to be on a higher extension than Luka.
Also good for Luka for actually taking, that team discount, because I saw the stories about, Mikal Bridges taking a discount so the Knicks could save money, and I know there's different levels to the salary cap, but he turned down, an extra, it was, $6 million. And it's like, okay, congrats, you're making $150. You can turn down $6 million to help the team. I don't get why everyone was giving him such a round of applause last week.
Somebody said UConn is a major team in Connecticut. But they did feel bad for you when it came to the Whalers and now the WNBA team. But, I mean, Connecticut and Boston fans, they might as well be. Yeah. You right in there with them. They right in there with them. How about this? I feel like this is a winner. Fan appreciation. Have you heard of the Portland Pickles?
Mm-hmm.
Portland Pickles, it's a college summer league wooden bat team, or league rather, or team in that league, I should say. And apparently what they did is in the eighth inning, they did that thing that we always joke about where they got a fan out the stands to actually get out here and play. He sets up for an at-bat, and then he does this.
Payoff pitch, high fly ball, left center field. Are you kidding me? Four letters, one word, gone!
First and foremost, you have done a lot of play-by-play. Rate the call.
That was good. I give it I'll give it a 9.0 on a scale of 10. That was a good call. I like the energy. I didn't see this. What was it? Was this guy did he look fit, an athletic dude?
Yeah, he looked athletic. He didn't look super strong. He looked a little bit wiry. And he's wearing
Open jersey.
His jersey's open. It's the BB Bat Boy jersey. It's not the same color that the team is wearing that day either. And he is just out here in his in his runners, and he steps up and a 2-run blast. No doubter, as you can hear.
Yeah, that's something. This is they're college kids, right?
Wood
bat. They're playing against.
Yeah.
So, yeah, still, yeah, that's cool, and that's real bragging rights. I mean, it's not like a professional game. If you did that in a professional game, then you could tell you all your friends, like, oh, I could be a professional hitter. But still, that is pretty cool to come out of the stands and actually homer.
That's something to tell your grandkids about, too, man. Like, I know it's a smaller league and all that stuff, but just imagine you sitting in the stands, and they call you up the bat, and you hit a two-run home run like that.
Is there a sport that you think you could get on the court with, like, college-level players and have some level of success akin to the two-run homer?
No. The only thing would be if you just left me all alone in the corner in basketball, and, like, eventually I'll probably hit a shot. That's about it. But, yeah, no, two-run homer, no.
Yeah, I feel like the two-run homer equivalent of college basketball is you got to knock down a three in somebody's face.
Oh, I'm not doing
right?
that.
Right? Like, I feel like that's the equivalent in that space. It's yeah. You got to do that.
No, I couldn't. Yeah, football, absolutely not. Baseball, no. No, none of the. But I'm a realist, not like all these sports fans who believe that they could beat, you know, Venus Williams in tennis. Yeah. No.
Well, knocking down a 45-yard field goal?
Yeah, no.
No, okay.
Well, I could score 5 points in a real NBA game.
Yeah, please. Yeah, right.
if they get you out here like a make-a-wish, and they, all right, here you go. Yeah. There, put the layup up. Yay, right. Look at you. I'm proud
of
you.
If we were playing 5-on-4, I'm the 5, and you just leave me all by myself, and I get to shoot every possession, maybe I'll eventually make one or two, but that's it.
If I had to put a loser on the situation, imagine being the pitcher out here.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, man.
Because I don't care if you grooved it either. Anybody letting you live that down?
Hey, that's a rough week. I ain't going to say you scar forever, but a rough week. That's a rough week for you, man.
I'm talking crazy.
Hey, that's the guy you hit the home run on?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you got to retire after
They're going to be snickering at the lockers, man. Yeah.
Joey in the concession stand, his father came in and hit a homer off of you. Jeez.
All right, those are some winners and losers on the weekend. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, it's about that time where we hand things over to Figgy Fig for Figgy's mixtape. What you got for us, man?
Yeah, so I got a story about a guy who stabbed two deli workers, and I think this guy got elephant memory. I was playing Y Plus. We got to talk about Noah Lyles. He had a little thing going on this weekend, and it almost caused some little beef towards the end.
Oh, okay. Beef and sports, always fun. Let's do that next.
Yep, it's the mixtape in the loop, Sports Radio 610. It's your man, Figgy Fig, holding it down on a Monday. Happy Monday to everyone out there. So I got to talk about this stupid criminal. I don't even know if this is stupid. I think it is stupid, but it's a crazy situation that happened in, I want to say this was Paterson, New Jersey.
Ah, yeah.
Salute the good old Paterson.
Yeah, that's one of them supposedly really, really rough places.
In New Jersey. Tourist spot, man. If you're in New Jersey.
Buddy, don't listen to Fig. Figgy will get you hemmed up. You better not try and be no tourist in Paterson. They will take your stuff.
Yeah. Salute to Paterson, New Jersey. But apparently, a guy attacked two deli workers with a box cutter. And I think this happened on Thursday. And this was all because he was angry about a sandwich. I guess it was a wrong order. And this order was 4 years ago.
What?
This was 4 years ago. So let's go to ABC 7 Eyewitness News in New York.
Bizarre story in New Jersey, where two bakery owners were stabbed over something they served 4 years ago. And tonight, as they recover from that attack, cops are still on the hunt for this customer who apparently held a grudge.
Munir Simran, a friend of the victims, tells us the suspect walked into Baladna Bakery on Main Street around 8 o'clock yesterday, complaining about eggplant he wrongly got on his sandwich.
He say he's allergic with eggplant, and he told him, you give me that eggplant in my sandwich, and my stomach was bothering me and stuff like that.
The dispute turned violent, with Mohammed getting stabbed in the stomach. When Abed stepped in to help, he was slashed in the arm. Both men were taken to St. Joseph's University Medical Center.
Why you finish the sandwich? Why you come back like 4 years later asking for like why? Like you said. That's crazy.
4 years ago?
What's the statute of limitations to complain about a meal?
Or hell, anything petty like that.
If you have an allergic reaction, I'll complain. I'll still complain about it 4 years later. If they gave me the wrong thing, I'm not going in with a box cutter.
Yeah, that, I feel like we should make that clear.
And I'm probably not going to go in person and complain, but I'll complain to others like, oh, that bakery over there? Yeah, they gave me an allergic reaction.
Yeah, but I feel like you got a solid, I don't know, 3 days to make your ire known. to the establishment before. You just got to hold that one, dog. Like, if you didn't feel like you needed to say something in that first 3 days, you just got to hold that. And I understand, again, not condoning your say something being with your hands and with straight edges. I don't think that that's the way you need to handle this, clearly. But I'm like, 4 years, bro?
It's true. It's probably a whole new staff.
What happened?
Yeah.
The dude that made the sandwich isn't even there anymore.
I'm sitting here thinking like, I'm trying to think the one time I got sick from eating Chick-fil-A or Chipotle. About 5 years ago, let me go back and tell them how I really felt and how that sandwich was so bad I was throwing up all over the place.
Man, you said Chipotle, man. I don't even know if anybody held a grudge for Chipotle at all. Remember when Chipotle was out here getting people sick on the regular and everybody was like, yeah, let me go head down and get me another burrito.
You know what happens?
You know what? Let me go complain about Chipotle right now. Let me go to that Chipotle all the way in Cleveland, Ohio, about that time they were passing out Ebola or whatever it was.
And Kirk Cousins Chipotle.
Yeah, let me tell them how I really feel and give them a piece of my mind.
That is
about 10 years ago.
I love the one line. Didn't he say, like, why did he finish the sandwich or something?
Yeah. Look, man, that happened way too often, man. Back when I used to work at KFC when I was like 16, 17 years old, we used to have people, we'd give them an order. They'd come back later on and be like, hey, my order was messed up with no food.
Right, of course.
I'm like, dog, you like, oh, no, I ordered these wings didn't really taste right. I'm like, dog, you ate all of the wings. You left like one wing in here, man.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, why you ain't take it back when you realize the order was wrong?
Classic.
I never understood that. And we still got to do something about that. Still got to give them like some
really?
Free wings.
It works?
Yeah. You got to make
sure. Why'd you sound so excited when you said that?
You got to
really, it works?
I got lunch plans today.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. The thing is, you got to make sure the customer is happy no matter what. Like, we'll cuss them out afterwards, but just like, hey, give them some, just give them what he ordered and get them the hell out of here.
Ridiculous.
I don't think I've remembered an order that went wrong for longer than like 2 years. I just don't. Also, though, I'm a person that if I get sick somewhere, within reason, I'm still going to go back there at a different time.
Really?
Unless it's like, you know, oh, it's very evident that was it. Because I feel like people place too much blame on a restaurant for something that is probably just a one-time thing, right? Like, people are like, oh, man, that place got to be dirty. Like, no, you just happen to get sick that one time. You be get sick eating at your own house.
Yeah. The one thing I hate is when people kind of have that mindset with, like, a local spot, like a small little family-owned business where you're like, oh, no, that sucked. But you keep going back and forth to McDonald's, and you get some bad fries once in a while, but they ain't going to stop you from going. So I kind of wish everybody had that mindset when it comes to everything.
Yeah, at first I was really on clown dude, but then it is worth noting, as you mentioned, the idea that he had an allergic reaction, that's a real problem. If it's like, yo, I'm allergic to this, you could have taken me out of here.
Yeah, if he got the wrong order and he's allergic to eggplant.
But see, if that happened to me, I'm going back up there as soon as I'm better.
He's been recovering for 4 years.
Yeah, four years ago. Yeah, I'm trying to think what kind of beef I have from 4 years ago, like a little petty beef.
713-572-4610. What is a beef that you've been able to hold for over 4 years?
I actually do have one too.
Oh yes, yeah, you'll share one. Or no?
Yeah, I share it. So back when me and my wife first started dating, this was probably 2009, maybe 2010. For her birthday, I got her like a cake. Her favorite color was like lime green and all this other stuff. So I'm like, let me surprise her with a cake. I got her the cake and she's like, oh, I like it. Didn't realize that her family made her a cake, but they hid it because they didn't want me to feel bad that I got her a cake. And then, long story less long, I found out she didn't really care for the cake.
Didn't care for the one you got?
Yeah, the one I got. So I'm still mad. I still bring it up to this day. And that was over 10 years ago. I'm still mad about
that. That's a good one. I would hold on to that one.
Yeah, I throw it in their face a couple times. A couple times a year.
See, 281, you got a reason. They say they got sick 3 times at a place.
Jeez.
Never going back. Yeah,
see, that's a good point.
You put in the work. You put in the time. You figure some things out.
Yeah. All right, we in the mixtape in the loop, Sports Radio 610. So over the weekend, Noah Lyles, He had a race going on. Was it the 200? Was it the 200 meters?
That's a shame that I don't remember exactly. I think it was the 200.
Yeah.
Or it might have been 100, but it was at the USA Track and Field Championships out in Eugene. I was watching some of that this weekend.
Yeah. So he was I'm saying this like he taking on one person, but I think the story was him versus Kenny Benarek?
Benarek, yep.
Yeah.
And it was the 200 final.
Yeah, so this is how that sounded. And it was a little situation that happened at the end of the race.
The one thing that Kenny Benarek cannot do in this race, he cannot leave it late. And that's why you see him going right past the world champion, Noah Lyles. But now he has to hold everybody off, including Noah. Benarek, as Noah Lyles tries to reel him in, Lyles slightly ahead and looks over and says, I'm still the world champion, and a little bit of a push there at the end as the rivalry comes into view.
So Kenny pushed him towards the end. Noah kind of caught up to him and stared the brother down as he crossed the finish line. And Kenny gave him a little shove at the end and then quickly tried to dap him up like everything was good, man. I thought that was kind of hilarious. So they had a little conversation. It took a minute for Noah Lyles to actually shake his hand. He was kind of looking at him like, bro, like, I'm not shaking your hand. Then probably about after 5 seconds, he shook his hand. They had a brief little conversation and kept it moving. But Kenny was asked about that situation that happened towards the end. And this is what he had to say.
You care to explain what happened between you and Noah at the end there? Your thoughts?
I mean, you know, like I said before, for years, Noah's going to be Noah. You know, you want to stare me down, that's fine. But, you know, I ran 5 rounds. He's fresh. You know, he can line up again when he's above fresh and see what happens. Because I'm very confident I can beat him. That's all I can say. A little personal stuff, and we'll figure it out.
What did he say to you?
What he said doesn't matter. It's just what he did. That's it. And unsportsmanlike, and I don't deal with that.
And it was the taunting that you didn't like, the respect factor to you?
Respect factor. I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, he's fresh. Last time he lined it up, I beat him. So that's all I can say. You know, next time he lined up, I'm going to win. That's all that matters to me.
You sound kind of salty.
Kind of. I don't think you could beat a guy who's like, well, we'll run it again and I'm going to beat you. When you was just the dude that was so upset, you pushed old boy. Like, it can't be that.
He was sitting there like, I done ran like 500 races before he ran his. So that's the only reason I beat him in practice before.
I was tired, man. Like, okay, so if
he was fresh.
I feel like if you truly believed that, you don't see the dude staring you down as he runs to finish the race, which, by the way, kind of a jerk move to do, also cold as hell.
It was a jerk move that I like, that I can appreciate.
Agreed.
Especially if you that good.
Agreed. You got in your feelings and pushed him. And then you realized you was in your feelings and you tried to dap him up afterwards. You know you were all the way in the wrong. So you can't get out here talking tough on the backside of
that. That's the part I don't like, because it's one thing for you to push him and then immediately, all right, no, you know what? It's all good, man. It's all good. But don't come post-game talking all this mess. Nah, man. I wish Noah Lyles didn't dap him up.
My favorite part is if he wants to stare me down, that's fine. Clearly it's not.
Yeah. That's not the whole problem?
Clearly it's not. Well, I don't know if that's the whole problem, because was it the stare down? Was he in his feelings about yet again watching Noah Lyles hawk him down? Because that's clearly what happened. Like, and that's, I imagine that's the most annoying thing about Noah, because Noah will get out here and talk. We know that. Mm-hmm. We've seen the ways in which he's trying to get at various NFL players and stuff. He'll talk. But also, he is a notoriously slow starter. So at any given point, if you are a pretty good runner, you're probably going to be ahead of him, but not for long. And that's got, like, I imagine that's got to be the worst way to constantly lose races. Just every time, I am ahead of him until I am not.
Yes.
That's got to be sickening.
That's kind of like that Tom Brady effect of, hey, I'm winning right now, and then Tom Brady get the ball back with a couple seconds left, beat you. It's like, dang, man, I almost had him.
But you didn't.
Yeah.
Some 281 said he pushed him because he ran in his lane. That's why he got pushed. I can't recall if I saw him kind of lean into the lane. But if that's the reason why, I don't necessarily know how we can explain on the back end trying to dap him up and then also getting in front of the camera.
Or I would have said that. I'm like, the only reason I pushed him because he got in my lane. I would have said that.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
Everybody would have understood it. Maybe we all would have called Noah Lyles a a-hole for doing that.
Yeah, that'd be a fair reason to push him.
Yeah. We probably wouldn't be talking about this now or we'd be, you know, trashing on Noah Lyles. But yeah, don't try to do that little quick little dap up at the end, man.
Yeah, my thing about it is, look, he might have good reason. Because again, I'm not out here like caping for Noah Lyles. I think he's done some things that I would term a little corny.
Uh-huh.
However, like, you don't have to also be corny in the way that you handle this, Kenny, right? Like, and when somebody's popping, you kind of just got to let that ride, man.
He should have stood on business, man. I would have gave him a little shove and just stood there. I wouldn't dabble. What's up with that? Like, nah, I don't appreciate that. Just that would have made it a little more fun. I probably would have been rooting for him a little bit. But don't give me that little corny dap up at the end. And yeah, then talk all that trash in the post game.
Yeah, that's fair. Because I have no problem with the shove. But yeah, I guess if then you immediately go and, you know, shake his hand after, but then still are bitter in the interview after.
The shaking the hand or putting your hand out at the end and showing, to me, that's throwing a white flag. Like, I don't want no problems. We good. And then, like, clearly y'all ain't good.
Yeah.
Man.
He wants to be good, though. He does. And I feel it for you, Kenny.
Not good enough.
There you go. Figgy's Mixtape, every weekday right here on In the Loop on Sports Radio 610, 1:20 p.m., mind you. At the Figgy Fig on social media if you see something that you believe to be mixtape worthy. All right, you're in the loop. Coming up next, let's get ready to hand things off to the fellas of the drive, Clinton Rom. But before we do that, we have the over-under on win totals for teams in the NBA. And there's a lot of experts that seem to not believe in the Rockets when it comes to what Vegas is setting the win total at. Do you think that win total will be achieved by the Rockets? 713-572-4610. We'll talk about that quickly next. Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Much appreciation to everybody rocking with us on this Monday, and a lot of thanks to Sean Pendergast jumping on with us live from West Virginia, courtesy of Yingling. Luke, I appreciate you rocking with me in the stead of the OG John Lopez.
Always. My pleasure. It's always great to hang out with you guys.
Yeah, man. Very, very fun today. We're getting ready to hand things over to the fellas of the drive here in a moment. But before we get there, the Rockets, man. Like, I know we haven't talked a lot about them. It's their offseason. There's been some interesting things going around. Like Jabari Smith Jr., I've seen some of his work. Amen Thompson, seen some of his work with a really well-regarded guard coach, as he works on his shooting and everything. And Jabari also sat down with one of those kind of basketball podcasters, the Young Man in the Three, which was used to be J.J. Redick's old podcast. But we have, you know, kind of official type things. We have Vegas numbers that have come in for the Rockets. I think the over-under was 54 set wins, or the win total.
Yeah, I think 54.5.
54.5 for the Rockets. And the Hoop Collective, Brian Windhorst of ESPN, I think alongside, I believe it is Tim McMahon and Bon Temps as well. Those guys were tasked with picking, you know, whether or not various teams would hit their win total. And it seems like they don't have very much belief in your Houston Rockets.
All right, Houston Rockets up next. Big number here. Big offseason where they trade for Kevin Durant. Bontemps, 54.5 wins for the Houston Rockets as the over-under.
I've talked a lot about how much I love the Rockets offseason. I still love the Rockets offseason. I'm going to take the under. I'm a little concerned about Kevin's health just in terms of getting to regular season, playing games. You know, they've got, you know, Fred VanVleet. We'll see how many games he's going to play if he doesn't get banged up. I do think they're, you know, they're still got to have some growth from some of the young guys. Reed Shepard's going to have a much bigger role. How's that going to go? You know, they probably played above their heads last year, getting to 52 wins. And like you in the West, I think we're going to have another big glut of teams all in about the same record range. So I could see a world where the Rockets go over 54.5, but I think it's more likely that they end up somewhere back around 50, and I'm going to take the under.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And the point of bringing in Kevin Durant was about the playoffs, not the regular seasons. Right. You know, it's about addressing their glaring void of a go-to guy down the stretch of close playoff games. If he plays 65 games in the regular season, awesome. I would anticipate them erring on the side of caution there. I think they'll be a top four, probably top three seed. I just don't know if there's going to be more than one team that's got 55 plus wins in the West.
Yeah, I really like what the Rockets have done. It's just a big number. A lot of things got to go your way to get 55 plus wins. Again, I'm going to hedge under, not a commentary on the Rockets, just a commentary on the strength of the West. I think everyone's going to kind of sort of move more towards the middle just because of, you know, some teams are going to take some losses.
So will the improvements that this team has clearly made in the offseason actually show up in the record? Because, I mean, you heard the various people on that podcast all kind of points to the idea that, no, they don't believe that you'll see more than the 52 wins that they won this year.
And I don't know if I disagree with really anything that was said in that clip. I think the Rockets are better this year than last year. But, like, if you go back and you look at last season, to their point, only the Thunder did reach 55 victories. Only three teams in the league did that throughout the NBA. And the West is a very tough conference. As they said, you know, Durant is more for like the playoff type of move. We'll see how many he typically plays, you know, a fair share of games. But as he gets a little bit older, we'll see how many games he plays next year. Everything that they laid out, I do sort of agree with. I don't think it's an indictment on the Rockets, as Windy said there at the end, that it's not like putting down Houston per se, just that maybe they don't think anybody other than potentially the Thunder get to that point, which is interesting because, like I said, I think I agree with them. So even though the Rockets are going to be better this upcoming season than last year, I don't know if you'll see that in the record or the standings. They might be similar to the 52 wins they had last year. They might be a 2 or 3 seed again, you know, similar to last year, but still, you'd still feel better about their chances to compete in the playoffs and win a championship because they are a better team, even if there isn't that huge jump in the record.
Yeah, and you're right, Champ. I see you on the YouTube page. They definitely had like a slump in February, and they had some winnable games that they let go, but they also had some really incredible runs. And I think they're... it might have been Bontemps that made mention of it. I think that he's right in regarding the idea of you're going to also have more teams that are actually trying to contend and compete this season that take wins away. Like, it's one of the things that I don't think we've talked about enough in the world of the NBA is how much the win totals have gotten inflated to some degree over the last like 10, 15 years with the teams who have tanked and just inherently come into a season and largely been bad and given up wins that they would have normally scrapped for if everybody was playing on more of a, I guess, previous NFL-type stance where we're all trying to go and get as many wins as possible, even if we know we don't really have an opportunity to go and win. Like, some of those wins that you walk in and know you're going to have as you walk into the building, you would not have. I think that you're getting a little bit closer to that feel with more and more teams, at the very least in the West, but largely around the league, going and trying to have some level of success, on top of the fact that there's a number of people that with the KD deal were like, he's not going to play all the games. And I don't know that that's the standard. I think the idea is probably if you get around that 65 game mark, that, you know, number in order to be eligible for awards, that's probably right. As long as that 65 games comes with health, when you're ready for the postseason, I think that that's where you are now. You're no longer an 82 game team. You're a 16 game team, seeing if you can win in that postseason and get those victories. So I think that that's probably the most important thing. I would still like to see you get 50 wins. Like, you still need to also position yourself, though, in a place where you are able to have home court advantage and have you know, a good space where you're not competing to try and stay out of the play-in. You need to have that level of comfort, but I don't think that you need 55 wins in order to justify yourself.
Yeah, that's fair. I think they'll be better this year, but I don't know if we're heading towards, you know, just a 20-loss team type of season. By the way, the over is, as they say, juiced, so it's at 54.5, but the favorite is for the Rockets in Vegas. The favorite is to go over that 54.5.
Okay.
Yeah, you get even money if you bet the under. It's plus 100. So if you agree with what those three guys just laid out, you can take the under without any juice on it. So that'd be nice. But also, by the way, I saw there was a conversation about 10 days ago on ESPN where they're saying, is this going to be the best team Kevin Durant has ever played on? We played audio when I was actually in for you, Reggie, a few weeks back about Giannis's brother saying this is the most talented team Durant's ever been on, forgetting the, you know, the historic Warriors that he joined. So I will say I do kind of like that the narrative, at least just in this one clip, has shifted a little, because I remember when I was in with you one day, we were talking about, you know, just being too positive. That almost concerns me when everyone is too hyped about something. So I do like, if we want to call this some sort of negative opinion on the Rockets, I like that we're at least getting it, and it's not all just like, oh yeah, they're going to be great. They're going to be great, because that worries me more.
Yeah, I don't even know if I'd call it negative. It's just tempered expectation, which I think is always good, like to make sure that you temper expectations, especially early on before a season kicks off, so that you don't end up in a bad place. I would say that that's largely where I'm coming from with a Nick Chubb type situation, is more tempered expectation than negativity towards him. The idea of, hey, let's not get ourselves in a place where we make ourselves sad trying to imagine something that was never going to be within the realm of possibility. And so, no, I'm super excited for when the Rockets get to action, because I think they'll jump in with a Texans team that should already start with a level of energy and intensity. Although we were talking about the idea of the offense and maybe taking a little bit of an opportunity, a little bit of time throughout the early portions of the season to find themselves. So hopefully you're not in a place where you have any level of negativity early, that at least your expectations can be in the right space.